Good afternoon, everyone. Welcome to this Wednesday hearing of the Senate Education Committee. It is April 5th, and we are meeting in the Belts Committee Room here in the State Capitol. It is 3:31 p.m. Just a reminder to folks to please mute their cell phones as we have an exciting agenda in store for you today. Joining me today is Senator Keel, Senator Bjorkman, Senator Gray Jackson, and myself, Senator Tobin. Please let the record reflect that we have a quorum to conduct business. For those who may have noticed, we do have an absence today. He's on state and personal business. I want to thanks to Zach and to Mary Gwen for holding down the LIO moderating and recording duties. Today, we will be hearing a confirmation for the appointment of Scott Jepson to the University of Alaska Board of Regents. We will also be taking public testimony of this confirmation. We will be having our second hearing of Senate Bill 99, sponsored by Senator Bill Welikowski, and opening up public testimony. And we will also be having our first hearing of Senate Bill 110, which is to extend the Alaska Education Tax Credit Program. There will be invited and public testimony. For those who wish to call in and provide testimony, if you are in Anchorage, please call 907-563-9085. For those in Juneau, please call 586-9085. That's 586-9085. For all other locations, please call toll-free 1-844-586-9085. As always, you can submit your comments to senate.education@akleg.gov. All of today's documents are available on BASIS or on the smorgasbord that is the table by the door. Moving right along, we will be heading into our first item of business today, which is the confirmation for John Scott Jepson, who is being appointed to the University of Alaska Board of Regents. Committee members should have received Mr. Jepson's resume. Printed copies are available by the door for those who are interested here in the room. Mr. Jepson is joining us via Teams. Hello and welcome to Senate Education, Mr. Jepson. If you could please identify yourself for the record and make any opening remarks that you would like.
Thank you. Chair Tobin, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Scott Jepson and I live in Anchorage. I believe you have a copy of my resume, so I'll just provide a summary of my professional experience and I'll conclude with comments on my interest in continuing to serve on the Board of Regents. I moved to Alaska in 1982 and I've lived here for 33 of the last 41 years. My son Trevor attended UAF where he received a petroleum engineering degree and is currently working in Juneau for Representative McKay. I received BS and MS degrees in chemical engineering from the University of Texas at Austin in 1980. After I finished my formal education, I went to work for ARCO in Denver. One of the reasons I went to work for ARCO was because they had an office in Alaska. After several years in Denver, I was fortunate to have ARCO offer me a job in Anchorage, and I jumped at the opportunity. The 80s were a good time to be involved in North Slope oil development. There were highs and lows in oil price, but it was still early days for Prudhoe Bay and Kuparuk. In the oil patch, there frankly is no better job than working on a new oil field. In 1991, I was offered the chance to move to Midland, Texas to manage ARCO's oil and gas fields in Wyoming, New Mexico, Colorado, and later Kansas. I took the assignment because I knew I had to leave Alaska to advance in the company. It was tough leaving, though. I remember wondering if I had made a mistake and if I'd ever get the chance to come back. The Texas assignment was a good one. I managed operations in a number of states and was able to be part of a startup company called Vastar Resources. Vastar was 82% owned by ARCO, but was IPO'd and listed under its own symbol on the New York Stock Exchange. In 1997, I had the opportunity to come back to Alaska to manage the Kuparuk Development Organization. I took the job and from that point forward made it known to my management that I did not want to leave Alaska. For the next 24 years, I was fortunate to have a number of different and interesting assignments. Besides the Kuparuk job, I led the technical effort to sell ARCO Alaska, which was a condition of BP's acquisition of ARCO. Managed ConocoPhillips Cook Inlet business, including the Kenai LNG plant. Was seconded to the Denali project, which, as you may recall, was formed to build a gas pipeline to the 448 to monetize North Slope gas. And I ultimately ended up leading ConocoPhillips External Affairs and Pipeline business. In March of 2021, after nearly 41 years with ConocoPhillips and its predecessors, I elected to retire. I don't intend to leave Alaska. I've also had the opportunity to serve on the University of Alaska Foundation. I joined the foundation board in 2011 and turned out in 2020. My tenure on the board gave me the opportunity to see the contribution of the university in meeting the job needs of Alaska to the state. About the same time as I retired, I applied for an open position with 2 years remaining on the UA Board of Regents. I applied because I believe in the importance of a quality state university providing Alaskans the opportunity to get a good education in their home state and qualify them for Alaska jobs. And I believe my background and experiences can help manage the UA system to achieve that goal. As my initial term came to an end, I gave a lot of thought to the reasons I would wish to continue to serve on the Board of Regents. When I first came onto the board, I believed that I would only reapply if I thought I could be influential in shaping the policies and strategies that would help the university succeed. After serving on the board for the last 2 years, I believe the answer to that question is yes. As a board, we have a positive yet challenging dialogue with the university administration about the problems and opportunities facing the university. In conclusion, I'm more passionate and optimistic about the future of the University of Alaska than I was 2 years ago. But my goals for the university have not changed. If I'm confirmed, I will use my experience and background to help the university become stronger, stable, with a strategic vision for the future that recognizes the fiscal pressures on the state, but also the university that serves the needs of the state's residents for higher education and the needs of the greater Alaska community. That concludes my comments. I'll be happy to answer any questions you may have.
Thank you very much, Mr. Jemson. We are having a little bit of trouble hearing you. If you can either turn up your volume or maybe get closer to your microphone, I think it would be helpful.
Senator, is this better?
That is better. Senator Ray Jackson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Scott, thank you so much for your willingness to serve. But I'm going to ask a question, and I've asked every single Board of Regents nominee the same question, so I'm going to ask you two, okay? So the mission statements in the region's policy emphasizes the North and its diverse peoples and honors the indigenous peoples and diverse peoples of Alaska. So my question is, can you tell me your thoughts about diversity in general, the role of diversity at the university? How will you as a region uphold the university's mission to honor the indigenous and diverse peoples of Alaska? Thank you.
Well, diversity is a key focus of the university, and it's a focus of the Board of Regents. We continuously monitor how we're doing in terms of students, having a diverse student body, diverse faculty. Probably the area that we have the most focus on diversity is with Alaska Natives. We have a very comprehensive Alaska Native Success Initiative, which has been in place for a number of years. We have classes and programs at all three major academic universities that focus on Alaska Native studies, languages, arts. There are programs that focus on trying to get more Alaska Native teachers, nurses, business people. It's a key focus of the university right now, and I think it's critically important. And diversity in general, I think, is important in our schools, in the university. Having people of different backgrounds, different ways of life, different life experiences, I think helps lead to a more diverse student experience, better decision-making, and overall better results for the university.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Senator Ray Jackson. Other questions? Senator Keel.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Regent Jepson, thanks for being with us. Appreciate your service over the past 2 years. The last 2 years have been, I think, rocky for the Board of Regents, for the university. And as the statewide administration has brought you challenge after challenge, I, representing Southeast communities, have been more than a little disappointed at the absence of focus on the University of Alaska Southeast. So here in a confirmation hearing, away from your agenda, away from immediate challenges, let me invite you to talk to us a little bit about your vision and the opportunities you see for the University of Alaska Southeast.
Senator Keel, through the chair. I think University of Alaska Southeast has tremendous potential. I don't think we have achieved it. I think it has a very strong role in the Southeast community. About half the students are community college certificate-type programs. The other half are multi-year degree programs. But I think there's a lot more we can achieve there. I'll be honest with you. I'm not exactly sure what the future for Southeast looks like. But we have an incredible facility located on the ocean, in a place that has diverse marine life, in a state that has a really robust research program. One of the things that I can see for UAS is that as we go down the road, that it can partner more with UAF in terms of research. UAF is our primary research facility, but that doesn't mean the other MAUs can't participate in that. We have a new chancellor coming in to UAS, Parna Palmer, and she has a background in zoology and marine biology. So I'm hopeful that she can bring some thoughts to this. I think it's an area that we as regents need to focus on. You know, I could easily see us doubling and tripling the number of students at UAS, but we have to get the right focus down there. And I think we can do that, but we're going to need some help. I don't have the secret to it right now, but it is something that I'm keenly interested in. And I can tell you in the conversations that I have with other regents, they are as well. This is something we need to unlock. And it's going to require some thought and some input, and I certainly welcome your input into this as well.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I appreciate that answer, and I too am looking forward to meeting the new chancellor and working with the regents.
Thank you, Senator Keel. Other questions? Mr. Jempson, I have just one question. As I notice on your resume, you have served on the UA Foundation Board. You also have worked for very generous philanthropic partners to the university system, Marco, ConocoPhillips, just to name two. And so I'm curious to know more about your thoughts on the interplay between your service here on the Board of Regents and the University Foundation in pursuing broad financial support and investment in our public university system.
I think the relationship between the Foundation and the Regents is a good one, and it's one that we need to continue to foster. The Foundation, of course, is in charge of managing the endowment funds for the university. They're also responsible for trying to raise money with new donors and basically enhancing the reputation of the university. We as regents, we need to participate with them in that. I think if asked or, and I've volunteered a number of times, whatever we can do to help make connections with potential donors with the foundation, more than willing to do that. I think as we go down the road, we'll see more participation by the university administration to that effect as well. One of the things that we really lack for the University of Alaska is we don't have a whole lot of alumni participation in the University of Alaska Foundation as donors. I think that's one thing that, as a regent, I'm going to be asking the foundation to focus more on. That's their bailiwick, that's their charge. We need to do more in that area. I think long-term, we've had a lot of donations from corporations, and that's been the mainstay of contributions to the foundation. And I think that's been good. I would like to see that continue. I also believe we need to see more contributions from the university's alumni. We have about 100,000 alumni out there, only a very small portion of them participate in contributing to the foundation. I think a lot of that is just education, getting the message out there, and that's one of the things that I intend to focus on with the foundation if I'm reappointed to the regents.
Thank you, sir. As an alumna of two out of our three public universities here in the state, my spouse and I both have left gifts in our wills to our public university, and I encourage many to think about that particular vehicle. Other questions? Senator Bjorkman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Mr. Jepson, for joining us at Senate Education today. And I'm wondering, considering the compact that the governor's administration made with the university to cut tens of millions of dollars from the university, what is your satisfaction level with the amount of funding that the university has received in the governor's operating budget this year, as well as the amount of funding the university has received for capital and major maintenance expenditures?
Senator Bjork, through the chair. I think the budget we have this year, as proposed by the governor, gets us to a place where we have stability. We certainly have had some suggestions for some additions to the budget, but overall, I think we're seeing the levelization in funding for the university. It's making it more predictable for the university to plan ahead. It's taking a lot of the focus away, negative focus on the university, when we can reach a place of stability like this. It doesn't mean that we're out of the woods. One of the things that I'd like to see us do is try to raise more funds outside of the UGF. And of course, there are really only two main sources of funding for us. One is UGF, the other is enrollment. Enrollment has dropped significantly since about 2012. And that is a focus. It's been a focus university ever since we saw this trend in enrollment. And I think as a region, one of the things that I'm focused on doing right now is trying to not focus on lagging indicators. Typically, the reports that we get as regents are statistics about how many people have enrolled and those sorts of things. But that's a lagging indicator. That's after the fact. What I'm encouraging the various chancellors to do is to provide us more leading statistics. University of Alaska Fairbanks has a very robust strategic enrollment plan, and I think we can dig into that and just monitor the things that they're doing, some of their metrics to follow their progress. University of Alaska Anchorage, Chancellor Parnell, will be developing and delivering to us his strategic enrollment plan later this year. And I'm hopeful that Chancellor Palmer, when she arrives, will take the same focus in University of Alaska Southeast. So while we could always use more money, so kind of an IQ test, can you use more money? We could always use more money. But I think we also have to respect the finances of the state. I think we've gone through the compact to a place now where I think we have a fairly efficient operation at the university. So now it's trying to find if there are other ways to increase revenue to the university. Enrollment is one. There are other areas that we haven't really taken advantage of, and that's monetizing intellectual property for the university. We receive almost no revenue from our intellectual property, yet we have hundreds of millions of dollars in research that we do for the federal government, and we own that IP. So one of the things that we're going to be focusing on is trying to find a way to monetize that. That's not really a new idea. It's been around for a long time. But as regents, I think one of the things that we can do is focus on that and try to stay the course while we have other diversions that tend to interrupt things just to try to manage university day to day. In terms of capital budget, obviously there's not a lot of capital in the budget as proposed, and we have a pretty significant deferred maintenance issue at the university. If there's more money that the legislature and the governor can provide us, that'd be good. Kind of the goal was $50 million a year to try to help us stabilize where we are. We started seeing funding decrease in about 2014 for deferred maintenance. And our backlog has gone from about $800 million to about $1.5 million. Doesn't mean the university is falling down. We're not going to shut down tomorrow. But it's becoming important that we address critical areas to maintain the integrity of our infrastructure. I think one of the things as regents, we need to work with the university administration and look for potentially other ways to fund some of our infrastructure needs. We've used bonding in the past. We might have to look towards bonding in the future. Of course, when you issue a bond, you got to find a way to pay for it. So we have to take that into account in terms of our revenue sources. But I think we need to get creative and maybe get creative with the legislature as well to find ways to take care of that infrastructure requirement.
Thank you for that answer. Follow-up, Madam Chair.
Follow-up.
So I've heard the funding level characterized, and I've seen the funding level for the operating request for the university, as well as the budgets that have been produced thus far by the administration and the other body as coming in less than what the university had requested, even though the compact agreement had been met to reduce the amount of revenue. So your characterization of the current funding as proposed by the administration as providing stability, maybe we're looking at different sheets of paper. It was my understanding that the university's request was not fully funded by the governor's proposed budget or the budget in the other body. Is that not correct?
Yeah, the budget we came in with was about $320 million, but the governor's budget was about $300 million. My understanding is that additional monies have been added to take care of some of the differences in the budget. For example, funding the salary increase that we have recently negotiated with the faculty. There are other things that we have also asked for in there that are probably discretionary. Some of them are working on ways to enhance the workforce. It's not going to be critical to the ongoing operation of the university if those don't get funded, but certainly I think they have a place terms of consideration by the legislature. There are some other areas like cybersecurity, some insurance requirements that total about $7 million or so. We're hopeful that we can get those approved through the budget process. The budget process isn't over yet. I know President Pitney has provided her thoughts in terms of areas where we'd like to see the budget amended. But compared to where we have been in previous years, I think we're in a place where we can work through this. I think there's probably some middle ground there. We have some reserve funds that we can use if we don't get all of it funded through the legislature. But it's a far cry from where we were 2 years ago. So that's what I mean by stability. We're not having to cut classes. We're not having to lay off individuals. We're a place where we can manage the university in this current atmosphere.
Certainly. I appreciate that answer. One more question, Madam Chair.
Senator Bjorkman.
As we think about the university and what it does, obviously it's heavily reliant on its feeder programs in the K-12 system across the state, as well as other educational opportunities. So what connections and what relationship would you like to see go forward from our K-12 schools in the state to the university system? How could you describe that?
Senator Bjorkman, through the chair. We have a robust program with our dual enrollment. Are you familiar with that?
Yes, sir.
So we have, I think, in excess of 2,000, maybe 2,500 kids that are dual enrolled in our high school and also in the university. We hope to expand that. It's a great way for students to get into college classes early, cut the overall cost of their college education. But it's also a good feeder for University of Alaska. About 30% of those kids in the dual enrollment program go to the University of Alaska system schools. I think that's fertile ground, a place where hopefully we can see more of those kids come to our universities to get a four-year degree. That's also an area that I know we're actively working to expand. One of our goals is to increase that to over 3,000 kids here in the next few years. I think that's the most robust area that we've got in working with K-12. We don't go much beyond high school. That's really our focus. So that's where we are right now, and that's the area that I think we probably have the greatest connection and the greatest opportunities.
Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Bjorkman. Any other questions from committee members? Well, thank you very much, Mr. Jepson. We will open it up for public testimony unless you have any last words before we do that.
No, I appreciate the opportunity to speak with you all today, so thank you very much.
Thank you very much. I'll now open public testimony on the confirmation for Mr. John Scott Jepson. Anyone here in the room wish to testify? Seeing none, moving online. I am seeing there is no one online, so I'm going to close public testimony. Mr. Keel, do you have a motion?
Thank you, Madam Chair. The Senate Education Committee, having reviewed the qualifications of the governor's appointee to the University of Alaska Board of Regents, and the nominee having very artfully flattered my region of the state, recommends that the following name be forwarded to a joint session for consideration, Mr. John Jepson. This does not reflect the intent of any of the members of the committee to vote for or against this individual during any further session considering confirmation.
Thank you very much. Seeing that there is no objection, we're going to take a brief at ease to sign the committee report. And we are back on the record here on Wednesday, April 5th. Thank you again, Mr. Jepson. You are more than welcome to stick around for our next order of business, or if you would like, you can step away.
I think I'll step away. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, sir. We will now have the second hearing of Senate Bill 99, Financial Literacy in Schools. Senator Welikowski is here with his staff member, Ms. Spencer. Mr. Welikowski, do you have any final comments before we take public testimony?
For the record, Bill Welikowski, State Senator for East Anchorage. I don't have anything. Thank you for taking this up again, Madam Chair, members of the committee.
Ms. Spencer, as I know you're about to leave us, would you like to make any last comments?
No further comments here either.
Thank you very much. Well, we've enjoyed your time here in the legislature, and we hope you come back. All right. I'm now going to open public testimony for SB 99. Anyone here in the room wish to testify for this piece of legislation? Seeing none, we'll move online. Oh, we do. Aha. I didn't see the buttons. Come on up. If you could please state your name and affiliation for the record and begin your testimony when you are ready. You have 3 minutes.
Hi, yes. My name is Flora Teo, and I'm with Junior Achievement of Alaska. For those of you unfamiliar with Junior Achievement, we are a not-for-profit organization that has been teaching students about entrepreneurship, economics, and personal finance nationally for over a century and in Alaska for 50 years. We do this by having local business leaders go into schools and implementing various programs that cover kindergarten through collegiate undergraduate levels. Although the curriculum is always evolving to address new technology and economic dynamics, our delivery system has continuously been shown to have a lasting impact on the students we are able to reach, as well as a bridge between the business community and educators. In the packets your office received, the Impact tab has studies culminating 100 years of research. For example, students that receive financial literacy through JA earn 20% higher incomes, because what financial literacy does in part is connect for students why education is important and how it ultimately affects their lives and the trajectory of their earnings. I say all this so you understand JA's goal is the same as SB 99's, ensuring the youth of today enter adulthood with an understanding of the fundamentals of personal finance. To this end, we are strategic partners, and Junior Achievement is here as a resource. Although for some people, personal finance is thought of as just common sense, I can assure you that there is a need for young people to get guidance in its fundamentals. Alaska is one of only 3 states where the legislature has not addressed financial literacy as an important part of the state's education curriculum. As leaders, it is important you acknowledge there is an educational need for personal finance and to give some guidance. Like any organization, school districts have the limited resources of time and money. School districts in particular have limited time with students to teach a vast amount of mandated knowledge. Realizing this, I know that SB 99 may go through several revisions, but again, in the end, it is important that in some shape or form, you formally recognize financial literacy as an important part of Alaska's curriculum.
Thank you very much, Ms. Teo. Is there any questions? Thank you very much. Are there other folks here in the room who wish to testify? Come on up. If you could please identify yourself for the record, you can begin your testimony when you are ready. You have 3 minutes.
Hi, my name is Bradley Lonkar. Today I am here to ask you to vote in favor of SB 99. I am a lifelong Alaskan currently enrolled at the University of Alaska as a biological sciences major. I attended Northern Lights ABC, a K-8 school in the Anchorage area where I participated in Junior Achievement every year. Because of the things I learned there, like taxes, filling out for FAFSA, budgeting, credit scores, these lessons have compounded. And over the years, they've really helped me not only remember, but apply them to my everyday life. Growing up and having financial literacy in my school helped me greatly. There were several points in not only my professional, but personal life, where having knowledge of basic finance made certain situations much easier to navigate. For example, I saved and bought my first car with cash. I applied for scholarships to... I applied for scholarships to attend college. I have my own health care, not my parents, and I am very careful about not taking any additional debt. These are skills that I use every day. I didn't realize how lucky I was that my school just happened to have JA. I think it's important that you vote in favor of SB 99. Thank you for your time.
Thank you very much, Mr. Lockhart. Is there any questions for this individual? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Is there anyone else in the room who wishes to testify? Seeing no one else here in the room, we'll move online. First up, we have Carmela Warfield from Anchorage. Carmela, if you could please identify yourself for the record and begin your testimony when you are ready. You have 3 minutes.
Thank you, Chair Tobin and honorable members of the committee. Good afternoon. I'm Carmela Warfield, and I am testifying today on behalf of Alaska Policy Forum. Alaska Policy Forum is a 501c3 nonprofit and a nonpartisan state policy think tank. We do not receive public funds. Specifically, I am offering testimony in support of modifying the core curriculum high school graduation requirement for Alaskan students to include a financial literacy course. In addition to my role as Executive Vice President for Alaska Policy Forum, I am the mother of two students in Alaska K-12 schools and a volunteer with local youth organizations. In my experience, I have found that young adults want to be self-sufficient, independent, and knowledgeable on matters that impact them. Few things are as impactful in the life of a young person as successfully managing their household budget, savings, investments and cash flow, earnings, and maintaining a positive credit rating, and avoiding financial scams that are an unfortunate reality today. Educating students on these critical areas as a component of their high school diploma ensures they have the tools they need to be financially literate. Other states and school districts have already implemented financial literacy curriculum requirements for high schoolers, realizing the importance of its role in the lives of their residents, and Alaska should follow suit. Additionally, we support an accelerated timeline for implementation of these courses. While stakeholders understandably need the opportunity to develop the curriculum, expediting the availability of financial literacy courses help prepare more Alaskan students for future success. Financial literacy courses also provide a stable foundation for Alaska's youth as they prepare to leave high school and equip them with the tools that will serve them well in their lives. Whether a young person chooses to pursue a post-secondary degree, additional courses in career and technical education, or enter the workforce, a comprehensive awareness and understanding of their personal finances equips them with the foundations they need to be self-reliant adults. This leads not only to their personal success, but also to a more vibrant economy for our state and a healthy community for us all. Thank you for your time and consideration today.
Thank you very much, Ms. Warfield. Are there any questions? Seeing none, thank you again. We are now moving on to Dora Wilson in Anchorage. Dora, if you could please identify yourself for the record and begin your testimony when you are ready. You have 3 minutes.
Good afternoon. My name is Dora Wilson. I'm a member of the Anchorage School Board, and I'm calling to testify in support of SB 99. In addition to being a member of the Anchorage School Board, I'm a mom of 3 biological children that are now young adults, and I have been a therapeutic foster parent for the past 18 years with over 45 youth that have come through my home. My kids, my bio kids, are now in their 20s. They are all in the adulting phase of life. As they maneuvered that journey, they have come to me at some point, each of them, and said, "Mom, why didn't they teach us about basic financial literacy in school? Why weren't we taught what a credit score is and how important it is?" My youngest had the benefit of participating in a youth summit her last several years of high school, where she not only absorbed those lessons of financial literacy, but has practiced them very well. The information she learned motivated her to start saving 80% of her income from her part-time job at the time. With those savings, she purchased her car cash at the age of 17, and at the age of 19, she purchased her first home completely on her own without any of our assistance, and she's now an Anchorage taxpayer. She's 22 now. And has paid taxes in Anchorage for years now. As a foster parent, I understand how imperative it is to provide financial literacy information to our many youth that will be forced into adulthood or into adulting as they age out of the care of the state of Alaska. And as an Anchorage School Board member, I'm pleased to share that the Anchorage School District is committed to transforming how we prepare students for life, career, and college. SB 99 aligns perfectly with the Anchorage School Board's goal to increase the number of students who will graduate from high school life, college, and career ready. The district has revised the state required economic and consumer economics course to include a financial literacy component for our students, and I encourage that all districts around the state do similar things and provide the same kind of information to all of our Alaska students. So I want to thank Senator Wilikowski for championing this bill. I want to thank the list of legislators that are supporting it as well. This bill will benefit each of our Alaska students, and in the long run, will benefit each of our Alaskan communities. Thank you for your time and consideration.
Thank you very much, Dora. We do have a question here from Senator Wilson, or excuse me, Senator Bjorkman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Ms. Wilson, for your testimony today. I'm wondering if you are aware of the state standards for government and citizenship that include both macro and microeconomics to be taught through a government course requirement.
I don't have that information right offhand.
So state standards required to be taught in government, which is currently a required course in your school district, include macro and microeconomics, which would include personal finance standards. Does the Anchorage School District currently require a financial literacy course as a requirement for graduation?
The financial literacy portion of it has been incorporated into the economics and consumer economics courses.
Very good. And are those courses required for graduation? Are those courses required for graduation?
As I understand it, yes. It started for our students when they became freshmen in the 2020 school year. And so they will have that literacy, the financial literacy base with our graduating class of 2024.
Oh, very good. I don't see that requirement listed on your district website, which is why I asked. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Seeing that we have no other person online, I'm going to close public testimony. It is my intention to hold SB 99 until we meet on Friday, April 14th. I am setting an amendment deadline for 5 p.m. on Wednesday, April 12th. Please work with my office and the bill's sponsor in drafting those amendments, which I do request be drafted through Ledge Legal. Any other closing comments before we move on to our next? Thank you. We'll take a brief at ease as we switch out. Oh, never mind. We're going to keep on going. Our final agenda item for today is our first hearing of Senate Bill 120 to extend education tax credits. Senate Bill 120 is sponsored by the Senate Education Committee. My office has been working with the office of Senator Bjorkman in presentation on this bill, so Senator Bjorkman will be here to introduce this bill with his staffer, Ramey Matuszewski. Ramey, if you could please join us here. Thank you. All right. The Department of Revenue has prepared a fiscal note for SB 120, and we will be going over those fiscal notes after the bill presentation. Senator Bjorkman, if you could please identify yourself and begin your presentation when you are ready.
Thank you, Chair Tobin and members of the committee. My name is Jesse Bjorkman, representing the northern portion of the Kenai Peninsula. And thank you for allowing me to present Senate Bill 120 today. So Senate Bill 120 is an extension and a revitalization of the education tax credit program that has existed for some time throughout the state of Alaska. What the tax credit program simply does is it allows corporations, businesses who pay income tax, corporate income tax to the state of Alaska, or other taxes to, instead of paying those tax monies into the general fund, to take a certain amount of those monies that would otherwise be paid to the state, and they can give those monies to education programs around the state. And the goal of the program, for me, and its effectuality, means that businesses and industries across Alaska can utilize those funds and give those funds to educational opportunities throughout the state, so that they can build and educate a stronger workforce, a workforce that is capable to work in mines, to work in the fishing processing industry, to work in the oil and gas industry, to work in the timber industry, to work in tourism, whatever it is or whatever it may be that those industries would like to educate folks on, with the skills, tools, and abilities that they need to go out into the real world after their education and win as a member of their industry. I think that would be a great way that these businesses who could take advantage of this program would be able to grow their own workforce. The Education Tax Credit Program was originally established in 1987 with the stated goal of encouraging businesses to make these charitable contributions to Alaska's educational institutions. Currently, the program is scheduled to sunset January 1 of next year. And the last reauthorization of this program was done in 2018. And this bill was wildly popular, receiving only one no vote during that process. So this program has a lot of value. It has a lot of juice to go toward moving our workforce development forward in this state and certainly supporting educational opportunities that are available. Currently, the program leverages $2 in private investment in education for every $1 the state forgoes in tax revenue, so that's a pretty good deal. Senate Bill 120 will result in the state sacrificing some additional tax revenue for additional investment by private business in educational institutions of Alaska. Tax credits that can be used to offset a myriad of tax credits. This is corporate income tax, as I mentioned, fisheries business tax, fishery resource landing tax, insurance premium or title tax, mining license tax, and oil and gas production tax. In addition to extending the Alaska Education Tax Credit Program, Senate Bill 120 returns the program to the credit provision in place before the program was reduced significantly in 2018. This bill, Madam Chair, would limit the total amount of credits to $5 million. Currently, that limit is set at $1 million, and $5 million was the amount that was previously capped before 2018. The amount of credit would be 50% of contributions, not more than $1,000, 100% of the next $200,000 of contributions, and 50% of the amount of contributions that exceed $300,000. There are some fiscal notes attached to this bill, which we all can review, and really a great opportunity, Madam Chair, to create a stronger connection between the business and industries in this state, as well as the educational institutions that train workers to work for these businesses and industries. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Senator Bjorkman. Any questions before we move on to a sectional analysis? Thank you. If you'd like to join us back here at the dais, I believe Mr. Matuszewski can go through the sectional, and then we will have invited testimony. Mr. Matuszewski, if you could please identify yourself for the record and walk us through the sectional.
For the record, this is Ramey Matuszewski, and I will be doing the sectional analysis for Senate Bill 120 to extend the education tax credits. Section 1 amends AS 219607B, which governs insurance tax education credits, to set the amount of the Alaska education tax credit at 50% of contributions up to $100,000, 100% of contributions from $100,001 to $300,000, and 50% of the amount of contributions that exceed $300,000. Currently, the insurance tax education credit is limited to 50% of contributions. Section 2 amends AS 219607D, which governs insurance tax education credits, to stipulate that contributions claimed as a credit may not be used to claim credit elsewhere under this title and may not be combined with other credits to exceed a total of $5 million. The current cap is $1 million. If the taxpayer is a member of an affiliated group, the total amount of credits for the group may not exceed $5 million. Currently, the cap is $1 million. Section 3 amends AS 4320.014B, which governs income tax education credits, to align with the tax credit amounts set forth in the Act. Section 4 amends AS 4320.014D, which governs income tax education credits, to align with the total cap on education credits set forth in this Act. Section 5 amends AS 4355019B, which governs the oil or gas producer education credit, to align with the tax credit amounts set forth in this Act. Section 6 amends AS 4355019D, which governs the oil or gas producer education credit, to align with the total cap on education credits set forth in this Act. Section 7 amends AS 4356018B, which governs the property tax education credit, to align with the tax credit amounts set forth in this Act. Section 8 amends AS 4356018D, which governs the property tax education credit, to align with the total cap on education credits set forth in this Act. Section 9 amends AS 4365018B, which governs the mining business education credit, to align with the tax credit amounts set forth in this Act. Section 10 amends AS 4375018D, which governs the mining business education credit, to align with the total cap on education credits set forth in this Act. Section 11 amends AS 4375018B, which governs the fisheries business education credit, to align with the tax credit amounts set forth in this Act. Section 12 amends AS 4375018D, which governs fisheries business education credit, to align with the total cap on education credits set forth in this act. Section 13 amends AS 4377045B, which governs the fisheries resource landing tax education credit, to align with the tax credit amounts set forth in this act. Section 14 amends AS 4377045D, which governs the fisheries resource landing tax education credit, to align with the total cap on education credits set forth in this act. Section 15 provides for January 1st, 2031 as an effective date for the expiration of the education tax credit program. Section 16 sets the effective date for this act as January 1st, 2024.
Thank you very much. Are there any questions? Senator Keel.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Matuszewski, or to the sponsor, for the shared taxes in this group, two of the fisheries taxes, and depending how you look at it, the property tax, the credits apply to both the municipal share and the state's share, or do they come only off the state's portion of the tax?
Through the chair, I do not know. I can get back to you with a follow-up email if you would like.
I really should remember. I've done this before. I just don't. Thanks.
We will follow up and get the answer on that question. Any other questions from committee members? Senator Keel.
And this may be one that the sponsor's office wants to defer to the Department of Revenue. The cap on the tax goes up by a factor of five. The foregone revenue to the state does not go up by that much in the fiscal note. Do we have a historical basis for that based on when the maximum amounts were reduced? Can we get the reason for that modeling?
Through the chair, Mike Mason, staff to Senator Tobin. Colleen Glover, the tax director, is on Teams, and I think she might be able to address those questions.
Whomever. It's great. Thank you.
Good afternoon. This is Colleen Glover, for the record, Tax Division Director. So, Senator Keel, your question related to the fiscal note, and we did go back and look at historical, right? So the bill sponsor had said this bill kind of goes back in time and kind of puts in some higher thresholds that existed before. We looked at kind of average contributions during that time, and those averaged around $6.6 million, and kind of use that as our basis going forward. So that's kind of the basis of the fiscal note. So it's also extending it out longer, as well as upping the thresholds. But from historical, and we do have an annual report we send to the legislature every year on the amount of contributions claimed and the number of the beneficiaries, and we have that on our website every year as well. But it was kind of assuming what happened in the past when it had the same kind of thresholds would happen again. But, you know, we don't really know that's really going to happen.
Senator Ray Jackson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Hi, thank you for being here. Can you answer the first question that Senator Keel had in terms of whether or not this would relate to, I think, municipal taxes is the question that you had, Senator Keel. Thank you.
The shared taxes, yes.
Thank you.
Through the chair, I will follow up on that in an email, if that's all right.
May I follow up, Madam Chair?
Follow up?
Thank you. I really appreciate that. But I was wondering if
Director Glover
could answer, since she's from the tax agency. Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Yeah, Senator Ellie Jackson. Yeah. I can double check on all of them, but I'm pretty certain that it applies only against the state portion, but each of there's six different tax programs it impacts. Some have a sharing, some have a credit, but I will double check and confirm and get back to the committee on that by program.
Well, Senator Ray Jackson.
And I asked that question because I thought that it only applied to state, but I look forward to response. Thank you very much. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Seeing no other questions from committee members, Director Glover, if you just want to walk us through the fiscal note, what should be in your packet is fiscal OMB component 2476.
So for the record, again, this is Colleen Glover, Tax Division Director. So just talking, just to understand all of the, there's seven different tax programs. This impacts, six of those are in the Department of Revenue Tax Division. One is in Commerce. We haven't analyzed that in our fiscal note. We've forecasted the impact on our specific programs. All of our tax programs that are impacted, all of the funding goes into the general fund. So any tax credit is a reduction to general fund. The impacts for FY, the current statute sunsets basically the end of this year. So if that's extended, it provides an additional half fiscal year of credits. And that is what you'll see in the $1.7 million credit for FY 2024. And then going forward, the limitations take effect later. And so, but ultimately, the impact on extending the repeal time and the increased would generate, we're saying, on a $6.6 million credit usage every year. And one thing to note is that, as I kind of spoke about, historically, right, the credit usage level was higher and there was a lot more participation between the taxpayers or the donors, the contributors who are donating the money. There was higher levels of that when we had higher thresholds. And also there was more education beneficiaries during that time, whether that's because of the credits provisions being reduced over the last few years or whether it's just because of the economy and other things. Like, I can't say for certain that's what it was, but there has been a kind of an overall participation level reduction over the last 3 years.
Thank you. Any questions from committee members? Seeing none, we will move on to invited testimony. We have joining us today Chad Hutchinson, the Director of State Relations for the University of Alaska System. Also on Teams, I believe, is Marigan Reby, the Associate Vice President of Development and Campaign Director for the University of Alaska Foundation. Welcome both to the Education Committee. Megan, it's really great to see, well, not see you, but hear you online. If you could please identify yourself for the records and begin your presentation when you are ready.
Thank you, Chair Tobin. For the record, my name is Chad Hutchinson. I'm the State Director of Government Relations for the University of Alaska System. And Vice President Reby, would you like to introduce yourself again?
Yes, good afternoon. Madam Chair, my name is Megan Reby, and I serve as Associate Vice President for Development for the UA System.
So, Madam Chair, the university has reviewed SB 120 and a lot of gratitude to the Senate Education Committee for taking this up. From our perspective, we're in strong support of the sunset provisions, and there's no objections to any of the provisions related to going back to the way the statute existed pre-2018. For the purpose of this presentation, this will be quick and broad for the purposes of respecting the taxpayers that have contributed to the University of Alaska. This will be kind of a broad generalization as to how we see things as a beneficiary and how we're providing for and meeting a need for Alaska's workforce moving forward because of these contributions that are coming in from the third-party entities. So from our perspective, think of the big checks. What you see right in front of you there was a check from Ken Ross for $1 million to the Trothieta Center up in Fairbanks. They're standing in with representatives of Doyon. So it's a good partnership with private sector, third-party entities to meet education needs in the state of Alaska. A lot of it is directed with regards to workforce, and it can be a cash or equivalent value in equipment, which you'll see later. There are many companies that have an interest in ensuring that their future workforce is prepared adequately, and that means making sure they have the funding and the equipment for the students as they go through the university programs. Here is a document that was borrowed by the Department of Revenue. This tells you the calendar year 2022, the the value of the credits, the contributions that were made, and then the benefit to the University of Alaska specifically. So the total contributions you can see there in the second column is $2.1 million. The credits claimed based on whatever the tax program that you're talking about, approximately for most of them, the credits claim is about 50%. So the clearest example there is the fishery resource landing tax. And you can see that there's 50% credit claim for the mining license and 50% for the fisheries business tax. You can see the amount that was given to the university, and this translates into academic programs. It translates into mining equipment, for example, equivalent value to prepare some of the mining students. It equates to research. So on the commercial fisheries ends, if dollars are being contributed to the university, sometimes there's an interest in a certain fisheries population, for example. And so they can make that direct contribution to the university. The work is done, and it's a benefit for the contributor. You can see there the oil and gas property tax, the total contribution was $40,000, and $40,000 was given to the University of Alaska there. This is just an example of some of the historical donors to the university, and there's a wide variety. You can see there's mining interests, there's commercial fishing. We do have Alaska Airlines, Holland America, so really a lot of the major industries in Alaska, in many ways, representatives from those industries have taken advantage of this program, and it's been very successful. It is true that the contributions have gone down over the years, post-2018, when the statutory change did occur. So I think that we're very grateful that the legislature is going to give it good debate and to see if they can change the amounts. If they see the wisdom in that, I think that the university would be very pleased in that outcome. So with that, I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Senator Ray Jackson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So I'm just curious. So does a corporation's contribution also qualify for a federal tax write-off? Thank you.
Senator Gray Jackson, through the chair, on a federal tax write-off, I'd probably defer to the Department of Revenue as to that particular question.
Director Glover, did you hear the question, and might you be able to answer it?
Yeah, good afternoon. For the record, Colleen Glover, Tax Division Director. We can't talk to federal income taxes. We could talk to our state tax programs. I mean, there's a potential it could be a charitable contribution, but we can't speak on behalf of the Internal Revenue Service.
If I can follow up, Madam Chair.
Follow up.
Thank you for your reply, and I wasn't expecting you to respond on behalf of the IRS. I just thought that you would be able to answer my question. Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you very much. Other questions? Well, thank you very much for your testimony. We appreciate it. We also have four invited testifiers, Stephanie Madsen, the Executive Director of At-Sea Processors Association. Ms. Madsen, if you could please identify yourself for the record and begin your testimony when you are ready.
Okay, well, thank you very much. My name is Stephanie Madsen. I'm here today to talk about the Pollock Conservation Cooperative's involvement in the Education Tax Credit Program. I would like to thank you, Senator Tobin and Senator Bjorkman, and the committee for taking this up. It's a very important issue to my fleet. The Pollock Conservation Cooperative was established in 1999 with the catcher processor Pollock fleet, with the goal of furthering improving conservation and utilization of Alaska's marine resources. In 2000, we established through direct donations and education tax credit funds, the Pollock Conservation Cooperative Research Center that's housed in Fairbanks and the School of College of Ocean Sciences. I'm a little nervous, it seems, because that's not the appropriate name. It's the College of Fisheries and Ocean Sciences. I should know that. My members have been contributing since 2000. I think we may be the largest private contributor. I think it's totaled about $16 million over all these years. I think in your packet, Madam Chair, There are some handouts describing what the funds have gone towards, both in the amounts and the areas. You'll see that a lot of it has gone to research that would help promote the conservation and management of the marine resources in the Bering Sea. Additionally, there are a lot of graduate fellowships and students that are involved in the research that go towards their master's and graduate degrees. I was quite surprised when I first started involving in this effort to find out how difficult it was for graduate students to get funding. So this has been a really good source of funding when it aligns with the students' interest in the interest of the tax gifters. I think that there is a one-pager there about all the students that the PCCRC, as we call it, have funded over the many years that it's been in existence. I wouldn't be a bit surprised if you don't recognize some of those folks on that list. I do know that some of them have gone to work, as been explained by Senator Bjorkman, for the state of Alaska, to National Marine Fisheries Service, and other entities that have grown out of their interest in the research area. Additionally, we also contribute to the dual enrollment program. Senator Keel is probably aware that UAS has the program in Sitka, the Fisheries Technology Program, that's a dual enrollment for high school students, that is an iPad remote program. We've been funding that program, or we've been paying the tuition, basically, with the gifts through that program for several years. The other workforce development program that we gift funds to is the Northwest Alaska Career and Technical Center in Nome. I think you've had presentations by Doug there. That has been a consistent source of our gifting through the years. Madam Chair, I think that this program is very important. I think it's pretty clear from the handouts and from your testimony that it is a critical component of making sure that Alaska's workforce is prepared and educated. I also think it's just a great way to get high school students interested in fish. And again, supporting those students as they go through their careers and eventually come to work in either industry or government that supports the fisheries research. I don't want to take too much of your time. I want, again, to express my extreme gratitude for taking this up. And as I said before, it's an important issue, and we're very supportive of all the elements of your legislation. Thank you, and happy to answer any questions.
Thank you very much, Executive Director Madsen. Are there any questions? Well, thank you very much. I really appreciate it. We now will open public testimony. Is there anyone here in the room who wishes to testify? Seeing none, moving online, we have Doug Walrath, the Director of NACTEC. Doug, if you could please identify yourself for the record and begin your testimony when you're ready. You have 3 minutes.
Yes, good afternoon. My name's Doug Walrath. I'm the Director of the Northwestern Alaska Career and Technical Center in Nome. Can you hear me all right?
We can.
Okay, thank you very much. I believe the word is serendipity that would follow Stephanie's presentation. NACTEC, has, as Stephanie has noted, has been a beneficiary of the education tax credit contributions that the Pollock Conservation Cooperative have provided to us for over a decade now. So NACTEC supports Senate Bill 120, extending the education tax credit sunset while returning the credit to its form prior to the 2018 legislative session at its that occurred. The Alaska Education Tax Credit has provided a mechanism to seek funding through business partners that has grown enrollment in Nome's Regional Training Center here at NACTEC. NACTEC has benefited from this credit every year since 2009. The Education Tax Credit has provided our program the opportunity to seek industry support, which has led to a new AvTech Transitions Program. We currently have several students from Bering Strait School District down at AvTech this week, going through maritime basic training, firefighting training today and tomorrow, actually, that's occurring. Created new junior high residential career exploration programs, and has permitted the purchase of advanced motion-based simulators providing aviation and maritime training, which liability would otherwise prevent flight and open water training here at the high school level. In the 5 years prior to the impacts of the cuts made in 2018, so from FY15 to FY19, NACTEC's industry partners contributed an average of $511,000 annually, which was 30% of our budget. After the credit became less friendly to corporate giving, FY20 to FY22, NACTEC's industry partners contributed an average of $195,000 annually, which is 10% of our annual budget. So the education tax credit contributions here at NACTEC decreased by 62% since the time the changes were made in that legislation in 2018. The education tax credit has made a positive impact in NACTEC programming. Junior high students attending week-long career exploration programs have continued on to high school training at a rate 21% higher than their peers who've not attended such programs. In Bering Strait School District, the high school students attending NACTEC residential training graduated at a rate 22% higher than the overall population. When business and industry work hand-in-hand with education and training providers such as NACTEC, it's a win-win for all partners. The education tax credit is a program that should be recognized as working for intended outcomes and one deserving of a sunset extension. Thank you for the opportunity to testify, and also be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you very much, Mr. Wolforth. We do have a question from Senator Keel.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Walrath, it's a good program. I like the program. I want to see it extended. You made a comment about the 18 forward time period and the decrease in corporate contributions. There are two correlations there. One is the lower limits. The other are lower federal corporate tax rates. Have you been able to tease out which of those, the reduced benefit of giving and the reduced eligibility of the program, which of those is the driver?
Yeah, Senator Keel, through the chair, I guess I would reply, I haven't really gone the route of looking at that. We were active here on this end when we saw effectively there was a phase down approach of how the friendly nature of what was in that previous provision would phase down, of trying to go after contributions prior to that occurring, because it didn't occur instantly. But to answer your question, no, I haven't gone the route of trying to determine why that's occurred. I know that it's much easier with the provision that was formerly there from my desk to go pursue funding, and it's something that we've been very aggressive with here at NACTEC since the time this became available around 2009-10 at our level.
Thanks, Madam Chair. Glad to hear it.
Thank you, Senator Keel. Any additional questions? Thank you very much, Mr. Wolforth. Moving on to Tara Reamer from Seward. Tara, if you could please identify yourself for the record and begin your testimony when you are ready. You have 3 minutes.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This is Tara Reamer. I'm the President and CEO of the Alaska Sea Life Center, and thank you for this opportunity to testify. The Alaska Sea Life Center is a 501c3 nonprofit organization located in Seward. You likely know that we are both an education and a research organization focused on Alaska marine science. What you may not know is that the Alaska Sea Life Center is also a beneficiary of the Alaska Education Tax Credit, and that's through our role as a Coastal Ecosystem Learning Center. We are therefore very supportive of Senate Bill 120, which will extend the Education Tax Credit Program and increase the potential amounts of tax credits from corporations. I thank the committee for sponsoring this bill, especially for returning the caps in those tax credit ratios to what they had been in the past. The Education Tax Credit Program is a very effective way to introduce philanthropy to Alaska corporations. We find the program a valuable tool when introducing potential corporate donors to the idea of supporting the Alaska Sea Life Center. I do want to note that it was a much more compelling program in the past. So extending the sunset date, as well as returning the terms to what they were previously to the change that happened in 2018, will greatly benefit our education program and other education programs in Alaska. So So again, thank you for being sponsors as a committee for this bill and your strong support for education programs across the state. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Tara. Any questions? Seeing none, seeing no one else online, checking out you, Zach. Perfect. I'm going to close public I'm closing public testimony. It is my intention to hold SB 120 until our meeting Friday, April 14th. And with that, we have concluded our business for the day. Senate Education Committee will not meet on Friday, April 7th, and we also not be meeting on Monday, April 10th. Our next meeting will be Wednesday, April 12th, where we will have a confirmation hearing for James Fields' reappointment to the State Board of Education and Early Development. We will also be taking public testimony on that appointment. We will also have public and invited testimony for Senate Bill 110, School and University Employee Health Insurance, and we will be receiving a presentation from a program that is near and dear to my heart and Representative Tux. The Alaska Department of Education and Early Development will be talking about parents as teachers. I hope everyone has a good long weekend, and I will see you all next Wednesday. As there's no other business before us today, I adjourn today's meeting at 4:43 p.m.